Risk. Farmers and ranchers live with risk every single day. Production risk, market and financial risk, and legal risk. But here's a question for our audience. Have you considered the level of human risk our nation's producers live with? Research data shows agricultural workers are at increased risk for on-the-job injuries every day. And most of these injuries occur during the months of April through September. In fact, if you keep track with Ag Injury News, there's almost 2 incidents per day. And these are incidents that are reported. We know that many farmers and ranchers do not report their injuries. You know, farmers and ranchers can fix most anything with electrical tape. All joking aside, while some injuries might be minor, some can be life-threatening. But if first aid is given within the first hour post-injury, chance of survival exponentially increases. But what about when EMS is far away? Well, everyone has a job in helping to save a life. Today, we're going to talk about what you can do on the farm in the event of a traumatic injury and how you can help someone stay stable until EMS arrives. Welcome to the Talking Total Farmer Health Podcast. I'm your host, Linda Emanuel, and today we are speaking with Robbie Rembrandt, an experienced paramedic and critical care educator. Robbie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Sure appreciate it.
You're welcome. So let's jump in here. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your work, what you do, and your impact in agriculture.
Yeah, awesome. So my name is Robbie Rembrandt. I am actually the founder of a training agency out in the western side of Nebraska called Life First Learning. And my background, so I started out, actually grew up in rural Nebraska. So this is my home forever, right? And I started as a volunteer firefighter, actually as a cadet when I was 14 years old. So I have been in the fire and EMS first responder industry for over 20 years. 10 of that, I was a flight paramedic and clinical educator on one of our transport platforms, so helicopter and fixed wing. And currently, I still work as a paramedic and a clinical coordinator and serve most of the western side of Nebraska, the Panhandle here, doing training and education through Life First Learning, then of course, still taking care of patients.
Absolutely. And for folks that aren't real familiar with the great state of Nebraska, that rural side, the western side of our state is extremely rural, extremely isolating. And so those first responders, your work that you do is critical in getting those patients from the traumatic situation that they're in, whether it's a farm or a ranch, and getting them into an acute care facility.
Yeah. A lot of times people don't realize that the amount of effort that goes into it, it's not always about rapid transport. It's about really high quality care. Mm. And so there's 2 aspects of it. It's having resources for transport, but it's also taking plumbers and electricians and other farmers and ranchers out of your community and training them to be first responders to offer really good care. So it's more, it's a multi-center approach. It really is.
I like that. I like that a lot. And this is going to be a great conversation. So let's talk about those farms and ranches. What are some of the most common traumatic injuries that happen on those farms and ranches?
The majority of these injuries and occurrences are happening in that, you know, spring through summer, early fall, when farmers and ranchers are in the fields, when we're calving, when, you know, you're putting cows out to grass or whatever that is. It's all activity based. So we don't see football injuries in January, right? We see football injuries in the fall. So this stuff is definitely trackable. A lot of it can be prevented, but really it's knowing that it can happen lots of different ways, but vehicles and tractors, you know, we don't see as many horse accidents as we used to, right? Because everybody's going to ATVs and UTVs and motorcycles. And so it's the vehicles, it's the farm machinery, it's everything. It's all encompassing all of those things back to somebody let their guard down for just a split second and something bad happened.
So, you know, when we think about those traumatic injuries, what should people do while they're waiting for EMS to arrive? And maybe backing up just a little bit, what are those common injuries that you see?
Typically, we see traumatic injuries where that could be head injuries. It could be maybe lacerations, broken bones leading to hemorrhage or bleeding. Those are probably the majority of the injuries that we see. Now, it can be anything. And the other thing that we have to realize is when we're dealing with heavy machinery, when we're dealing with equipment or animals, a lot of times we don't just see one body system affected. So these patients are multi-system trauma. So if we have a rancher who is riding a four-wheeler across the pasture and, you know, hits a cattle trail and it rolls over, it's a head injury, it's a broken bone, it could be a breathing problem. It, you know, there's all of these things that encompass into that. So really, when we look at trauma, trauma is your entire body system. And so those are probably the most common injuries that we see. And it's injuries that are affecting multiple body systems, coming back and saying that that's multi-system trauma. So, you know, you can have a laceration from maybe a piece of machinery, or you can have a broken bone if somebody got their arm stuck in something. And that stuff is absolutely an emergency and needs to be well taken care of. But most of the time, we're seeing these multi-system effects from these injuries.
Yeah, that's why it's so helpful to have you as experts come to the scene to help, because of course, bystanders see that initial trauma, not realizing all the other things, all the other systems that are affected.
The other thing that is really important for the listeners to realize is the more time that goes by, the more body systems that are affected. So in rural America, if you are waiting 10, 15, 20, 35 minutes or an hour and a half for EMS or first responders to get there, the longer that person's entrapped, the longer that bleeding occurs, the longer that situation continues. And it could be just environmental temperature. You know, getting injured in July is a lot different than getting injured in January and being out in the elements. And so all of that stuff is vitally important. And there's so many things that go into the aspect of patient care in these injuries that it's really hard to encompass it all together.
So, you know, thinking about those traumatic injuries on the farm and those farm workers that are working together, what should people do while they're waiting for EMS or those first responders to arrive? What are those first steps?
That's a great question. And I think that question actually starts before the injury happens. That is those farmers and ranchers sitting down. Most of these are family operations, right? And just sitting down and saying, okay, what happens if we're 20 miles north of the house and we're cutting hay and something happens? Or what happens if I'm not back at dark? And it's putting yourself into the perspective that it could happen to you or your family. And if you start those conversations early, we know that there's a better response to those situations. And I'm not saying a better response from first responders. I'm saying a better response from the people that could potentially get to you and save your life. So if you are in one of those situations where you're bleeding, you've activated 911, you know, if it's a significant hemorrhage, it might be your 13-year-old son that gets to you first on a four-wheeler and applies pressure or a tourniquet.
Yes. Yes.
And it's really important to put that into perspective and think about it and just have that conversation because, yeah, you know, the first responders are going to show up with all of these tools and maybe a helicopter and an ambulance and maybe even blood. You know, maybe your first responders have a blood program where they're bringing you blood. A lot of times, the presence of having a salvageable patient depends on the bystanders and the people that are there first and what they do. So activating 911 is always important. And then moving on from that, you know, I tell people when we go out and do first aid and CPR classes and just kind of introduction to first aid, that the most sensitive organ in the human body is your brain. It needs energy, it needs oxygen, it needs the glucose, all of those things. So typically when we see patients that are injured, whether it's a medical problem or it's a traumatic event, if it's severe, we see an altered mental status. Their brain's not working correctly, right? And so I think that sometimes just recognizing the fact that, you know, dad normally knows exactly where he's at and what's going on. And now he's on the phone with me and he's not making any sense. Could it be because he has his arm stuck in a piece of machinery and he's been bleeding? Or could this simply be a stroke? And so I think just realizing that mental status in all of us, that's our most sensitive organ, respiration, breathing, perfusion, all that goes into what our brain does. And if at any point in time you're with somebody that has suffered a medical emergency or a traumatic emergency, when you start seeing that altered mental status, that could be the first stages of shock. That could kind of be your first idea that this is severe. And I think just recognizing that and accepting that and then passing that on to first responders is vitally important.
Those information, that conversation you have with 911 is critical.
For sure. And it could be location. It could be they're trapped in a piece of machinery and we may need more resources. All of that information is key. And you know, we've all been in that situation where the ambulance is called, somebody has their arm in a piece of machinery, or they have an altered mental status and they're having a stroke. Well, where are you at? We'll go 15 miles north on this corner, 12 miles north, 1 mile west. And so having the ability just to know how to pull up coordinates on your iPhone or your Android phone, even the simple fact of if you have a county road, you have, you know, a large property with gates, number your gates, go through gate 12. Doesn't have to be much. I mean, it could honestly be mailbox numbers and something that's just very simplistic to where we can narrow down the location. With that, you know, with being there and being a bystander and providing care to yourself or somebody else when you call 911, the one thing that a lot of people don't realize is if you think about the word shock, folks think of shock like, oh my gosh, it's bad because I was just delivered bad news. Or they think of shock as, you know, shock is you're dying. The interesting thing about shock is shock will kill everybody. If we grow old and have heart failure, you know, we die of cardiogenic shock. And if we're in traumatic experience and when we bleed, we die of hypovolemic shock. And so just knowing the signs of shock, number one, that altered mental status with the brain, and then knowing that to treat people with shock is keeping them warm, you know, maybe positioning them flat, laying on their back and keeping their airway open. All of those things go into that. And so really it's a prevention of shock and activating 911 as soon as possible.
All right. That's those ABCs that we've often been taught. If you've taken CPR, is maintain that airway, cardiovascular perfusion. And I've come across some accidents in my years of experience, both as a nurse as well as just a female producer. So I think about those people that are responding and not talking to professionals, those farmers that come to help. Do you have some tips for them when you first come across a scene? What should be those initial reactions?
Yeah, you know, responding to your fellow neighbor or somebody that you know in the middle of a medical emergency or traumatic event can be extremely stressful. And so many people wake up day to day thinking that it's not going to happen to me. And that news about somebody getting stuck in a power takeoff or somebody getting their arm stuck in a piece of grain machinery is kind of that faceless name across the country, different Midwestern town, until it happens to you. And it's one thing to read about it on the news. It's another thing to go down and find George, who you grew up with, right? Running the fence lines together as a 10-year-old little boy or little girl. Find him dead or dying in a piece of machinery doing the same thing that you do day to day. And so, you know, when for the longest time we've taught people, you know, oh, don't move them, call 911, keep them calm, do all those things. And as a first responder, you as a bystander can't keep people calm, right? You can reassure them. You can't necessarily keep them calm. If I look down and my arm is mangled in a piece of machinery, I know that something happened. I made a mistake. Somebody made a mistake. Something happened, that small lapse of judgment. But as a fellow farmer or producer that's responding to that emergency, we have to remember that when you leave that scene and go back to your farm, farming and running cattle is going to feel different. Because now it hits home how dangerous that day-to-day job is that we have. You have to take care of yourselves. You have to take care of your family. You have to take care of your children. But you need to have healthy coping mechanisms for that. And you have to be able to step away from that for a day and know that the cattle are still going to get fed. And so that is a very interesting dynamic. And I guess with that, that's a really good segue into just self-wellness. It's very stressful to be a producer and to be a farmer, and there's a lot out there, and it's not going to get any easier. We know that. And so just that wellness of knowing that I went down the road, I helped whoever that was in this traumatic event. How do I take care of myself now? Or how do I go back to my family and talk to my family about what happened and improve the wellness for our entire operation?
And as you said, as you led off this conversation, prevention.
Yeah.
Right? Have those conversations early on and talk about what can we do to make sure everybody stays safe and good. Communication. I cannot stress that enough, is being able to understand where everybody is at a given time. So yeah, great, great advice. So, okay, what if, here we go into the what ifs. What if someone is injured and alone? You know, what advice would you have for them to help take care of themselves until help arrives?
Yeah, great question. So I'm going to kind of flip back into that last question where I said that, you know, when we know that the illness or the injury is becoming severe, you become altered. And so this is one of those situations where you need to aggressively be activating 911. And you need to do it early before you're into that shock state to where you have that altered mental status. Because at the point where we get a phone call and they say somebody is out here, and normally we're narrowing it down by square miles, right? Not by a residence or one single field. Once we get to that point where we say somewhere out here, there's somebody injured, but we're not sure where they're at, that's where these situations can turn into a recovery. And so the easiest way, if you are injured, whether you know it's severe or you're not sure, before that severe shock sets in and you become drastically altered, or you don't know where you're at, or you're not able to give people directions or know what to do, activate 911. And with that activation of 911, the only thing that I could think of that would come before that is if you notice that you had significant external hemorrhage or bleeding, slowing that down or stopping it and activating 911. There are times where it may be a benefit for you to get in a vehicle, head towards town or head back towards the house. Don't ever put yourself in a perspective where you think you're going to make it all the way to town because you really don't know what's going to happen. Get yourself to a well-known location. And so that's what I tell a lot of these individuals in rural areas is if there's an intersection of County Road 19 and County Road 102, go there. If that's the closest, that is a well-known location, easy to access, just go there. Even if that means that we find you across the fence sitting in the truck, that's okay. We have a well-known location to rendezvous at.
Exactly. And I think about areas of poor broadband. Sometimes they have to. You just have to get in a vehicle and at least get some cell phone reception. So good advice. And I think farmers and ranchers sometimes wait a little bit. They're like, oh, this is going to be okay, right? If I just sit this out, wait it out a little bit, maybe it's not as bad as I think it is, and there's work to be done.
Yeah, and farmers and ranchers, you know, we have that identity of dexterity and just mental toughness. And it is okay to yell for help. It is absolutely okay. And you know, we joke about this when we go to rodeos. You have a bull rider that gets bucked off and he has a bone sticking out of his arm, and you know, he asks if he can ride again. And some of that is just kind of that mentation of kind of how that situation looks to the other competition and family, and that mental durability is great. But it is okay to call for help. It is okay to get help coming. And you know, if you want to decrease the overall impact on your family, you need to be able to say I'm okay, or wave the flag and say I need help, and realize where that line is.
Absolutely. Well said. Well said. So, you know, let's talk about first aid, and we talked about communication, but as we think about prevention, where can folks go to learn more about first aid?
What I would do is really start with your local volunteer or paid fire and EMS services. Even your hospitals, the hospitals in the rural communities and the fire departments, EMS services, a lot of times they're kind of that go-to for that community outreach, first aid, CPR. There's probably somebody in your community or in your coffee club, right, that you know was a volunteer or currently is a volunteer. Reach out to them, figure out when they're doing training. And maybe it's not something that they're hosting, but maybe that's something that they can add into their program, you know, where they can say, we're going to do a farm safety day.
Exactly. And I think folks sometimes think CPR is going to be a 2-hour course, right? And there's this big test afterwards, but it has changed dramatically over the last 10, 15 years. Sometimes our churches and our local high schools have the AED devices. How many folks out there, the general public, understand how to work that AED device as well as give CPR? It's simplified greatly.
Yeah. And, you know, just to kind of put it into perspective, if you, you know, if somebody was having chest pain, let's say it's a medical thing, they had chest pain, they're having a heart attack, and they drove themselves to the hospital, they arrive at the hospital, and they collapse in the parking lot, they're not found for 5 or 6 minutes, the chance of mortality of death for that person increases by about 10 to 12% per minute. And so you could be 20 miles from town, you could have a hired man who collapses in front of you, and you could do high quality CPR for 20 minutes, wait for the ambulance, and your hired man still has a higher likelihood of survival than that patient that collapsed in the ER parking lot. So that bystander CPR is significantly important. You know, 2% increase in mortality per minute with high quality CPR versus 10 to 12% without it. And so it's important. One of the very first great outcomes that we had with a cardiac arrest patient was the rancher was a volunteer firefighter who was retired, and he had a hired man that collapsed in front of him, and him and his wife loaded the hired man up on a flatbed bale bed pickup and drove towards town and met the ambulance, and he did CPR on him the whole way, and he's still alive. He's not alive because the ambulance drove fast. He's not alive because there was a helicopter or anything else. He's alive because his boss knew CPR, and he perfused his brain, and he went back home to his kids.
So thinking about farmers and ranchers, and here in my part of the Midwest, we're getting ready for the growing season. What are some basic first aid items farmers and ranchers should have on their farms and possibly in their pickup trucks?
Yeah. So, you know, just the ability to have a kit for bleeding control is probably right up there on top of that list. Having just some clean gauze, having the ability to place a tourniquet on an extremity if needed, just having that available. And that's not even like when we think of a first aid kit, we're thinking about like multi factors of, you know, antibiotic ointment and a diaper pin and all of these things that you see at, you know, your local retail store, your first aid kit. There's about 95% of stuff in commercial first aid kits that are not going to save your life. It's going to be nice to have. And there's about 5% of things that will save your life. Of those 5%, it's probably your bleeding control supplies. So when it comes to industries like farming and ranching, bleeding is going to be a top priority to control. And so having, you know, we have these newer packets of gauze that have like hemostatic agents that are impregnated in it that help slow bleeding, trauma bandages, tourniquets, commercial tourniquets, like the CAT tourniquet or the combat application tourniquet, having those readily available will save somebody's life. And it used to be, we didn't use tourniquets like we do now, but with Iraq and Afghanistan and with so many soldiers having lower extremity and upper extremity injuries, we know that tourniquets save lives.
They do. And those Stop the Bleed classes are fairly readily available. And I'm assuming if folks searched online, they'd be able to find a class that they could take in via webinar if they're not able to make it to a location.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, like I said earlier, we're in the age of communication. You can sit down and eat breakfast with your family, and after breakfast, say, let's watch a 5-minute YouTube video on bleeding control. 99% of them are going to be pretty good content. You're going to learn something.
Okay. We've had a great conversation today, Robbie, and your experience sure helps us to understand the importance of being prepared and prevention as well as treatment for those traumatic injuries. Do you have any other or additional resources you'd like to share?
Yeah. For those followers that are in Western Nebraska or Northern Colorado, Kansas, South Dakota, Wyoming, our website, Life First Learning, we are doing some webinars and things like that where people can join remotely. And we're really working towards providing care and education to not only first responders, but also bystanders too. So that's always an option that people can look at. We have most of the CPR guidelines come from the American Heart Association. So the American Heart Association, they have some great advice and different things that you can look at and see, you know, from pamphlets to videos. The best advice that I could probably give going into that is that it can happen to you, and it can happen to your child or your wife. And having that thought process that there is a possibility is probably the most important piece that you could take out of this.
Well said. Very well said. Again, I've enjoyed our conversation. Very helpful. And I'm sure thankful for the work that you do within your team, Robbie. You are making a difference. And do you have any other last thoughts before we wrap up?
I have lots of thoughts, but just, you know, the producers and the farmers, that is a underestimated job. That's a difficult position to be in. Most of these are family operations, and there's a lot of first responders out there that don't have to respond to people that they know. And so that's the other thing to think about when you're out there in your communities and you're engaging with your communities, is realize that if you know 90% of your volunteer fire or ambulance service, they're going to be the ones that are coming to you. And so the wellness of the community is also engaged in the patients and the responders. When we have something that happens in small town USA, it affects everybody. It affects the responders. It affects the schools. It affects the producers. And we need to realize that there are profound effects within our community. And so if we have a young child that is severely injured, you know, we see counselors hit the schools almost immediately. The small communities don't really have a lot outside of the schools, right? What happens to the neighbors and the farmers and the ranchers and the EMS providers? And so I think it's just knowing that if a tragic event like this happens in your community, it hits everybody. And so check on your neighbors, take time, slow down, and really appreciate those fine aspects of life, because 9 times out of 10, we don't really sit back and think about those concepts until something bad happens.
Absolutely. Importance of taking care of yourself and your neighbor.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Robbie, for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Okay, folks, that's another great conversation and a wrap. Thank you again for tuning into another episode. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast to hear more from AgriSafe on the health and safety issues impacting agricultural workers. We are always open to new ideas or stories to share on this podcast. Feel free to connect with us by email at info@agrisafe.org and title that email TTFH Podcast. You can also get our attention by using the hashtag TTFHpod on Twitter. To see more from AgriSafe, including webinars and our newsletter, visit us at www.agrisafe.org. This episode was created by AgriSafe Network, directed by Laura Siegel, hosted by me, Linda Emanuel, edited by Joel Sharpton for ProPodcastingServices.com, with guest Robbie Rembrandt.